This idea that Michelle Obama would be a good president flies in the face of history, because we saw what her husband Barack did. And even though some people are nostalgic for that, it's based on a false memory of what those years were like. Those were not good times for America.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. Election year is upon us, and the sitting president is old, unpopular, and entrenched in corruption scandals. Would his party still bet on Joe Biden, or would it seek more viable candidates? Today, I'm honored to speak with Dr. Peter Navarro, the director of the National Trade Council during the Trump administration and author of many books, including the one titled In Trump Times. Currently, Dr. Navarro is Professor Emeritus of Economics and Public Policy at the University of California, Irvine. Dr. Navarro, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Brian, great to be here. And just for your viewers, the best way to follow what I do is I have this Substack at peternavarro.substack.com, peternavarro.substack.com. And the article about Michelle Obama and what Biden's going to do first appeared in the Substack, and then in the Washington Times, which I regard as one of the best commentary papers. But let me talk a little bit about where we're at with the Biden regime. We have a situation where Democrats are very, very uncomfortable with Joe Biden. Democratic strategists don't think he can win. With each new revelation about the prodigal son Hunter, with each new poll that shows Biden falling further and further behind Donald Trump, they want Biden out. But here's what's interesting. The Democrats are smart about what they do, unfortunately. There's a famous Nixon saying that when you run for president, you got to run to the extreme in the primary to attract primary voters, and then run back to the middle in the general to win, to be more moderate. And so here's what I predict will happen. Biden is running unopposed in the primary, and they're going to let him do that. And he's going to rack up all the delegates, and he's going to be a lock for the nomination in August at the Chicago convention. But what they're going to do, the Democrat brain trust, as it were, they're going to force Biden out before the convention and after the primary season. The reason why they want to do that is by avoiding a contested Democrat primary where you have a gaggle of candidates basically trying to outwoke each other and be extreme, because that's who these people are. What they want to do is avoid all of that and come up with a centrist candidate that they can kind of fool the American public with. So let's talk about why Biden would step down first. He's really concerned about two things. First of all, his legacy. He wants to be remembered well in history. And if he gets beaten like a drum by Donald Trump in the general election, which is likely, he will go down as the most hapless and feckless president of the modern era since Jimmy Carter. So he's wants out based on that. There is the other issue of pardons, not just for his son Hunter, but also his brother James. Mm-hmm. He kind of flies below the radar, but he's the consigliere, as it were, in the Biden crime family. He needs a pardon for Hunter and James, and then for himself. So what I see is he'll step down. Before he does that, he'll pardon Hunter and James, but only after the election. And then Kamala will step in between the November end of election and the inauguration day, become president briefly, and pardon Joe. Now, she won't be the nominee. She is almost as anathema to the voters as Joe is. The Democrat strategists know this. They will tell her this. They will tell her under no circumstances will she be the nominee on the November ballot, but they will promise her first dibs on the next Supreme Court position that comes up, and she'll take that in a heartbeat. So then the question is, who do they put in a backroom deal in Chicago at the convention? And my money is on Michelle Obama as the presidential nominee for the Democrats and Gavin Newsom as the vice presidential nominee. What does that do? People like Michelle Obama. She's popular, and that crosses party lines.
How do you know that? How do you know she's popular? Maybe she's popular among Democrats, but I'm not sure that she's popular among more, moderate voters.
We shouldn't fool ourselves on that. If you look at the polling of her approval ratings and disapproval ratings, they were very high when she was in the White House, and they're still high now. And it at least extends into independents and some Republican women. Okay, but this is not to say that she'll be a good candidate. I'll get to that in a second. Newsom on the ticket, Michelle on the ticket, needs to bring back the black voters, which are running away, and maybe bring in more women away from Trump. Newsom is the pretty face from California who basically will make sure that the millennials and Gen Z folks won't go over to, say, Bobby Kennedy Jr. or Trump. And that's what they're going to try to do. Now, we should anticipate that as Republicans, and we should have a counter strategy. So what is that? Well, first of all, this idea that Michelle Obama would be a good president flies in the face of history, because we saw what her husband Barack did. And even though some people are nostalgic for that, it's based on a false memory of what those years were like. Those were not good times for America. We had economic stagnation and a total breakdown in our foreign policy and all sorts of mischief that Donald Trump inherited. So that point has to be made. We have to separate Michelle's popularity from policy. Mm-hmm. And it's policy where we beat Michelle Obama. As for Gavin Newsom, this guy, he was the mayor of the worst woke and failed city in America for two terms, San Francisco. And people do not want the Californication, pardon my French, of the rest of this country. So that's a beatable ticket, but we have to anticipate it. And look, it's like, I think everybody should be outraged if they try to pull this on us, because the whole point in our democracy of having primaries among the parties is to vet the candidates. There would be no vetting of Michelle Obama. She'd just go on the ballot, hide in the basement, do a couple of ABC interviews, and that'd be that. And we cannot afford four more years, but we have to be ready for this. I think the odds of Biden being the nominee are certainly less than 50%. And you can see that the Las Vegas money, people actually bet on this stuff, is like, that's about right. A lot of people now don't think he's going to be the nominee. So who will it be? Well, my bet's on Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom as a ticket.
Yeah, you say it's a dream ticket for some Biden cool crowd. So who are these people, Biden cool crowds, and how influential are they, would you say?
Well, extremely influential. I mean, look, the Democrats, even though they're supposed to be the party of the people and the grassroots, they're very organized at the top. If you look at what they did in 2020 with strategists like Mark Elias and Perkins Coie, they spent years, not just 2020, but several years before, changing all manner of election rules in order to stuff the ballot box with ballots which would more likely be fake than real. And they were very effective at that. They have the power now. And remember, the legacy media, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, PBS, none of the journalists in the media or the people who run those companies want Trump, and therefore they don't want Biden because they don't think Biden can beat Trump. So the way it'll work, I mean, if Biden refuses to step down, the media is going to savage him. They're just going to just descend on him like piranha. And, you know, the Hunter Biden scandal is there. And every day we learn more about it. And there's no question about, hey, if we had known what was in the Hunter Biden laptop prior to 2020, November, Trump would still be president. I mean, that's been shown by the polling on that. So that's kind of how I see the scenario. Certainly there's some other candidates, Gretchen Whitmer's being talked about and others. But the beauty of Michelle from the Democrats' point of view is she'd be kind of like a Teflon, and they think they could probably get away and pull the wool over the eyes of America. But remember what that Democrat Party stands for. It's a woke world. It's a woke zombie world. And it's a poor economy. It's a total collapse in foreign policy to the extent that it raises the risk of war in the Middle East, Ukraine, and the Taiwan Strait. It's chaos with the social agenda in our schools and the transgender and women's. Americans do not want that. That's not America. That's not who Americans are. We are a center-right country at the end of the day. And that's what we need in the White House and in the Congress.
Remember when the only uncertainty in the news was the weather forecast? And you could depend on your local newspaper to bring you the news with only a hint of bias. Nowadays, there's a deluge of news outlets striving for your attention. But surprisingly, all the narrative is from one direction. At The New American, we hold fast to the timeless truths of our founders and provide a refuge of honest reporting. Visit thenewamerican.com today and get 25% off your subscription.
But on a relevant note, I'd like to get your thoughts on the Republican primaries. If there is a Biden coup crowd among Democrats, there's definitely a Trump coup crowd among the Republicans. And it looks like the RNC is leading it with the way it supports anti-Trump candidates such as DeSantis and lately Haley. How much of a concern is it to the MAGA movement?
Yeah, that's a genius question, by the way. that's like, I mean, there's a rhino Republican and name only cabal, every bit as powerful as the Democrat cabal. And who are they? They are the kind of Bush Cheney, Liz Cheney, Mitt Romney type wing of the Republican Party that historically has supported corporate interests over worker interests, who does things like offshore American jobs to communist China, and also supports these endless wars in places like Afghanistan and Iraq, and is more than willing to send our men and women into harm's way in order to advance their globalist agenda. Now, look, those people control the purse strings in Republican politics. The Koch network, the dark money, the Koch network, that money, we can see where it's going now. It's all started going behind Ron DeSantis. He didn't make the cut. There was a brief flirtation with Tim Scott. He was a nothing kind of candidate. And now the latest shiny penny is Nikki Haley. And, you know, I know Nikki personally. I mean, I was in the Trump administration when she was ambassador to the UN. She is one of the most untrustworthy politicians I have ever met or seen operate. She was a constant thorn in our side to Donald Trump. But right now, the spin is, it's got to be Nikki, giving her a bunch of money. And it's going to be very difficult for the Trump nation to fight a lot of this spin because they control the media. It's shows like yours, Veronica. It's Steve Bannon's War Room. It's Real America's Voice. It's Newsmax. There's a very small number of conservative outlets that get the news out. But surprisingly, Americans are very sophisticated about what is really going on, even though they're being spoon-fed alternate realities right now.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Sir, who do you see as a potential running mate for Trump? And how do you think this ticket would fare against that of Obama Newsom?
Well, in my book, I wrote two White House memoirs, Taking Back Trump's America and In Trump Time. And in the second one, Taking Back Trump's America, I do go through who I would think would be suited, not just for the cabinet and the White House, but also for a running mate. I certainly think two folks I know well from the administration, Mike Pompeo and Robert O'Brien, would be at or near the top of a consideration list. Mike was first, he was at the CIA and then at the State Department as Secretary of State. Unlike a lot of people who stuck Trump in the back on the way out, Mike has been loyal. He didn't jump into the presidential primary out of loyalty. So he's a possibility. The other one that I really have great respect for is Robert O'Brien, was the national security advisor. And he's a very seasoned individual. He could step right into vice president candidate and go right out on the campaign trail, be very polished. You just look at some of the clips of him and when he was at the White House, and you understand what I'm saying. There's certainly Kristi Noem, South Dakota. I think she's been positioning herself well for that, and her advisor is somebody I have great respect for, Corey Lewandowski. So I think she would be worthy of consideration. Certainly Carrie Lake in Arizona, but I'm hoping that Carrie just focuses on winning that seat that we need to take back for the Republican Party in Arizona. And so it goes. I don't see anybody who's currently running against Trump as viable. Haley would be the least trustworthy. She doesn't belong in the administration, aside from maybe Ambassador to Botswana. Chris Christie, of course not. I mean, for obvious reasons. I think Vivek Ramaswamy would be a good cabinet official, either at the secretary or sub-cabinet level. But nobody out there in the primary has any kind of vice presidential timber or possibilities, in my view.
Very interesting. And lastly, I'd like to ask you, do you anticipate any black swan events that could dramatically alter the dynamics of the 2024 presidential race?
Yeah, I don't know if even they're black swan events, because there are so many things that are at tipping points now. I mean, you could have, for example, communist China invading Taiwan before Election Day. You could have some kind of decisive event in Ukraine with Russia. There's a high likelihood of some being drawn quickly into a broader conflict with Iran, which would then implicate both Russia and China because they're Iran allies. For Biden, I don't know how that would play out, other than it's well known, the wag the dog strategy, where he might try to rally the nation in times of disaster. And certainly the economy. I mean, it's interesting. Everybody made a big deal about how the stock market finished really robustly in 2023. In my Substack, petermar.substack.com, I do a weekly market newsletter and wrap on that. Now, last Friday, I broke down like the 25% increase that we saw in returns for 2023. And 90% of those gains, more than 90% of the gains of the S&P 500 in 2023 was attributable to less than 20 stocks. Think about that. That means that the other 480 stocks either had pretty slow times or down years. And I think that's more reflective of the underlying Bidenomics economy. So we could see a stock market crash. We could see another financial crisis in the banking industry. We could see kind of a global contagion that's triggered by one of these war events. And there's a lot of things going on, but that's a fine question as well.
Yeah, and what's your message of hope for Americans for this year? Because it will be very turbulent for sure.
Look, it's time to take back Trump's America. I was one of only three people, Veronica, who was with President Trump all the way from the 2016 campaign to the end. President Trump brought economic prosperity, rising wages. He sealed our border. He kept China, communist China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran all at bay and under wraps. And we have a judicial system which has been weaponized by the Democrats. That's got to stop. And we have an election system where we have to get back to paper ballots and have fair elections. So there's a lot of things that need to be done in Trump's America, which I think is reflects the middle of this country, which the elites seemingly have so much disrespect for. But my message of hope to people watching this is hope that Trump gets elected, but it's not going to happen unless you get involved. So action, action, action. That's the mantra. And there it is.
Dr. Navarro, I would like to thank you so much for your time today, sir. Please tell us what's the best way to follow you and your work.
Thank you so much. PeterNavarro.substack.com, PeterNavarro.substack.com. As perhaps at least some of your viewers know, I myself am being hounded by the Department of Injustice. Mm-hmm. I've been convicted of an alleged crime that no senior White House official in the history of our republic has ever been charged with, much less convicted of. And all, in my view, I have been doing is standing up for the constitutional separation of powers. So go to peternavarro.substack.com and support that effort, and it'll help me fight this legal battle for you.
Do you have a legal fund of some kind that people can
I do actually
chip in and help you out?
Sure. The legal fund itself is defendpeter.com, defendpeter.com. I'm just heartened at the response I've had. Thousands and thousands of Americans have sent me small donations. We've raised about $700,000 so far, which sounds like a lot of money, but this is going to be our expenses are already greater than that, and this is going to be more than $1 million to get through the appeals process. So defendpeter.com, you can help me out there too.
Yeah, thank you. That was Dr. Peter Navarro, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of the New American Magazine.
Hey.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.